Good morning, honorable members and members of the delegation from the Department of Science and Technology. I see we are still only three members from the committee. I'm hoping that they will be joining us soon, but I think 1 week for them. We can just start the people running. We will start by introducing ourselves as a normal habit here, and then you'll also introduce yourselves to us, although we know you, but you know, as a matter of courtesy, it's better that we formalize that, because there may be members who may not probably know you. I'll start with myself and my secretary. I'm Nqabang Ngobo, chairperson of the committee from the African National Congress, assisted by Shanaz Isaacs here, who is our committee secretary. Any matters that you probably may want to relate to hereafter, Shanaz is there to assist if I'm not there. And I'm sure other matters can relate them to your official here, who will introduce himself from the side of the department. I'll give two members also to introduce themselves according to. From, yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm Ellen Lyne. I'm from the ANC. In this committee, it's my first time. And just for the record, this SKE project is in my constituency area. Thank you, in Kanava.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Sana Blaiki from the Congress of the People and member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Marion Shu, Democratic Alliance.
I say I've just been joined by three other members.
Chair, morning. My apology. Nkosi Muelo Nongkonyana, deployee of the ANC from the OR Tambo region and a member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. I am Zintenda, member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My apology for arriving a little bit late. My name is Bobby Mujumi, a member of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, deployed by the African National Congress. I come from Gauteng in the region called Tshwane. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I haven't got. I would also like everybody else here to introduce himself or herself. So starting from yourself there, at least because there is media, I want to know who is here. Starting from you, right around.
My name is Richard Davis. I'm a journalist with SARPA.
Linda Nordling from the Science Journal Nature.
Good morning, I'm Pam from PNG.
There at the back is my PA, Nina Pasensi, okay.
Celine Merrington from SABC.
Sorry?
Celine Merrington from SABC.
Okay.
Abra Barbia, SABC.
Wow. There's a lot of meter today, eh?
Lyndon Khan, SABC. Morning, Francis Wish from Bua News, Government Communications.
From?
Bua News.
Oh, Bua.
Boa.
Yeah. Boa or Boa? Boa. Boa. Okay. Okay, welcome all of you, media panel. Indeed, this is a very important project for South Africa, so I I guess that is why you are all here. You want to hear from the horse's mouth where are we going after this. Next year we are looking forward to winning the bid against Australia, and I hope the officials from the department are going to give us something next to those good news. Without wasting any time, I will allow the department to lead us then. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning to the committee as well. Also, thank you for the opportunity to do this presentation in terms of giving an update on the SKA and where we are at the moment. Just to start off by introducing myself, my name is Valman Swamy. I'm the DDG for Research, Development and Innovation in the department.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Anita Lewis. I am from the SKA South Africa project.
Leander Franz, Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Ministry of Science and Technology.
Thank you, Chair. Just two apologies before we start. The presentations that we sent through didn't have the images because of the file size. We couldn't send it through a normal email channel. So the slides that you have don't quite have all the images that's in this presentation. The second one is that I have to apologize for my colleague, Boneni Moefa. He got a later flight this morning, so he might or might not make it, but I'm still au fait with the issues, and I will talk to that. That was supposed to be. He was the chief director for international cooperation and resources in the department. He's talking to the international lobbying strategy.
Does it mean that you are going to miss that part?
No, I'm familiar with that because I've been also.
You will be focusing us on that.
So just to start off in terms of an introduction, apart from what I've just done now in terms of introducing the team, I thought it would be prudent for us to, very first issue, to talk about the budget adjustments, because there's been a lot of questions asked around whether we're actually losing the budget for the SKA. The funding commitments for the SKA have not changed in terms of what Treasury has allocated for the SKA. What was allocated in this financial year ending 31st March was that we had a budget of $508 million. Now what has happened is, and Anita can talk more about the technical issues, we had to look at a design review of the demonstrator project, and that obviously meant that the timelines had to be moved out a little bit so that we have alignment between the demonstrator and the full SKA as it comes online. There are various strategies we were actually working towards. For example, you know, us focusing on the meerkat and morphing that into the SKA as it develops. So we had to make sure that the design was right in terms of what the SKA requirements were. So in that light, what we then decided to do, instead of holding back the budget in the department or in the National Research Foundation, we decided to ask Treasury to allow us to release the funds but still keep the commitments for the outer years. So essentially the $508 million has been moved into the 2012-13 financial year and the 2013-14 financial year. So the 2012-13 financial year, we've put in just over $200 million, and the 2013-14, just over $300 million. So we still have the $500 million intact in terms of the budget commitments to the SKA. So that hasn't changed. It was just a rescoping or reviewing the design that needed us to reallocate the budget. One of the very strong engagements we're starting to work on is the African engagement, because in terms of winning the bid, this is a critical component of the bid. You will also notice that we refer to it as the African bid, not just the South African bid. The reason being is that if you look in terms of the countries that are bidding for it, in Australia you could put the entire SKA in Australia, whereas in Africa, in South Africa, you can't. You need to rely on your African partners, and you need to make sure that you have buy-in and commitment from the African partners. So the African component of the SKA bid is quite critical for this, and I think there's a lot of work that's been done, a lot of appreciation and pronouncements being made, and for example, the African Union making a recommendation in support of the bid as an example. So there's quite a robust engagement around the African continent. Just to also add that the minister is hosting a breakfast meeting on this Friday. She's essentially hosting the African ambassadors to South Africa, just to bring them on par in terms of what's happening in the SKA, so that we can bind support from this end as well, and that they will kind of talk back to their political principles back home as well. The other big issue that we've been working on the SKA as well is looking at the economic benefits of the SKA. Now, there has been a study that's been initiated and that's been just concluded, so there's deliberation inside the DST in terms of looking at the report and then approving the release of that report. So hopefully that in the next month or two we'll see that study being released. But what it's trying to do is, and I think this is especially important for the African component, the African dimension, is you can't just ask African countries to support the SKA. You need to give them a sense of what they're getting back in return as well. And I think the economic benefits is an aspect of that. The other issues, for example, access to broadband, because once you have the SKA in place, you have the connectivity issue will allow access to broadband as well. So those are the kinds of benefits we're trying to sell to the African partners. In terms of, I wouldn't call it necessarily corporate social responsibility, but our response to science awareness in general, we started working at the schools level, and there's quite a robust program around engaging schools around this particular project. And I think about 2 or 3 weeks ago, the minister actually launched a computer lab at Carnarvon High School. And I think there's a very similar initiatives at the primary school levels as well. But what we're trying to do is trying to excite students in terms of getting them to do science and engineering, especially in these communities where we have these social challenges. And, there's not a lot of interest in terms of taking up science and engineering. So we're trying to make a difference in these areas as well. We have also awarded more than 250 bursaries. The exact number is actually 263 bursaries. In terms of supporting students for undergraduate studies and so on. So that's our initiative in terms of human capital development, because one of the other critical issues, obviously, having the necessary capacity in place. When we do land the SKA, we need to ensure that we have scientists and engineers that can help us take the project forward. From the department side, we have also started the Inter-Ministerial Committee, IMC Committee on the SKA, and these involve various ministers, the Minister of Energy, DERCO, there's other ministers as well, the Minister of Economic Development, as an example. The first meeting we had about 5 ministers attending, but we've invited more than that, and obviously it's an issue around coordinating diaries. But we're planning to have the next IMC in the next month or two, the follow-up to that. But just to give you a sense of what transpired during the first IMC and what we're working towards, obviously this was an induction session by the minister, trying to highlight the project and getting support from the other ministers for it. We also started talking about setting up an electronics sector in the Northern Cape. Now, inside the department, we're looking at, in some instances, a sector approach to some of the initiatives we're working on. For example, here's the SKA, and you need an electronic sector to support that. We have the space sector as an example. You need building satellites and so on. You need industrial or electronics capability. And so, I think from a government perspective, we're also targeting those areas where there's not much development, and so Northern Cape is quite a convenient place to put this. And there's other initiatives that it builds around, for example, the solar parks initiatives that the Department of Energy is working around. We would need these kinds of skills as well. So we started talking around setting up an electronic sector in the Northern Cape to support not just the SKA, but a whole host of other initiatives that's destined for that region. I've also mentioned the need to strengthen the African involvement, and that's starting to happen. The minister's also set aside some time to make kind of whistle-stop visits to most of the African countries, just to talk to a political counterpart to get their buy-in and kind of form up the relationship and the support towards the SKA itself. One of the other discussion points that came out of the IMC itself is the Minister of Economic Development that offered to commission work on the economics of the SKA, and that's the study I related to a little earlier on. So that work is almost completed. The other thing is that we do have, in terms of international engagements across these various departments and government, the ministers engage with counterparts abroad in terms of bilaterals and multilateral forums. And so what we are essentially asking them is to act as ambassadors for the SKA, so that when they engage in these bilateral discussions, international engagements, they can always punt the SKA as an important initiative. I'd just like to, I will hand over to Anita, but just before I do that, the SKA for us is essentially the next World Cup for South Africa. It's the World Cup of regular astronomy, essentially. And now that we're kind of on the home straight in terms of when the decision is going to be made, there's a lot of work that's going in terms of lobbying for support, and lobbying on many different fronts in terms of funding, getting the funders support in terms of the African bid. There's also the technical issues, the science issues as well. So there's a lot of lobbying around that. So I'll hand over to Anita just to give you an update on the program.
Thank you, Chairman.
Before that, I would like to know the ministers that you have started with now, because it's very relevant for us here in Parliament also, so that you can identify those portfolio committees that are allied with those ministers. Okay,
I'll just give a very quick rundown of all the different facets of the program and the progress to date on all of those. I think people think it's only the BIRG, but as you know, there's a very big telescope being built in the Karoo, deployed in various engineering phases, and that's ongoing. I would like to give you just a heads up on that, and then also talk a little bit about the Human Capacity Development Program, because that's incredibly important for us to be able to eventually run the telescope, really work with the data that we got to really do the world-class science. It's one thing to have a toy to play with, but the other thing is to use it effectively to do world-class science. And the aim is to really do science that can win Nobel Prizes for us. The SKA program, these are the various components. Then, as I said, the site bit, the Human Capital Development Program, the BIOCA telescope and prototype systems. The infrastructure is huge. When we first bought the farms that we are building the telescope on, there were no good roads leading to the site. We had to make sure that we put electricity in, data transfer networks, everything had to go in from scratch. Then there's a big lot of work going on, mostly through the DSD and some key members on our site, the team that work with developing the African partner countries, and we've recently appointed a project manager to actually start looking at the African countries that are interested in building facilities in their countries and bringing them on board and helping them either build new facilities or convert existing facilities to link into an African network, essentially. So we're looking at a win-win situation for Africa, even in the case where we don't win the bid. We don't want to even contemplate that, but we want to win for Africa even if we're not successful in the bid. And then, of course, all the international work that's going on in the background to develop the technologies that will ultimately be built into a telescope like that. I think we forget sometimes that the machine that we're going to build, there's not equipment that we can go and buy off the shelf. Even things like the antennas, the dishes that we're developing are completely novel. And that obviously brings with it quite a lot of R&D work, quite a lot of balancing between cost and the actual cost, the cost of the system, and the actual maturity of the technology you bring in, and so on. So I'll just update you on that. On the SiteBird side, most of you know this already, but the actual telescope, the SKA itself, will be deployed across Africa if Africa win the bid. It is definitely an African bid in all aspects. There will be three different types of antennas as the baseline design stands at the moment. That will be deployed as part of it, working over different frequencies, and those will be roughly looking as on that picture there. These will be the lower frequency arrays. That will be the array that's about 3,000 to 4,000 antennas, looking almost exactly like the near conditions look now. And this will be another type of array, which we call aperture array, which is basically a fisheye lens looking at the sky all the time, working at fairly low frequency, but having very, very big data intensive computing requirements with it.
As most of you know, we've recently had the AGI bill approved. So we do have a bill now protecting astronomy in South Africa, not just radio astronomy, but also optical astronomy, from having developments in the areas where we want to do science, so that people can't go and put up sort of big lit up stadia and stuff like that right next to Sutherland, or do anything that would harm astronomy in the areas that's relevant. At the bottom, you'll see the RFI container with the trailer with all the RFI equipment in that. That's a campaign that's happening at the moment, and we have to make sure that the sites that we propose are actually radio quiet as they stand at the moment. So there's two campaigns, one in Australia and one in South Africa, on the go at the moment, where they take these trailers all over the country and they measure the sites that we've proposed for the remote stations, for the core station and so on, to see if it really is quiet. So the site selection process, I think that's the one that most people are interested in. There's at the moment, the RFI measurements is part of the site characterization campaign. The selection criteria is actually being tied down at the moment, and there's quite a lot of international politics being played between us and South Africa as to what should be criteria and what should not be criteria. And they've more or less finalized that now, and there's a document out, the draft document out, which is basically the site selection group's document, which lists all the work that needs to be done by the different countries now to submit. I think the date is somewhere towards the end of this year where you have to submit your final documentation for the bid. So us in Australia will be doing exactly the same in response to this request for information. And then there will be international committee sitting for evaluation during the first part of next year, and they expect a decision any time from about May next year. There's a design review which has there was a concept design review last year, and the outcome of that concept design review asked the international office to do quite a few major changes to some of the design aspects and actually tie down the technologies they wanted to use in the SKA. And they then asked for a Delta concept design review, which now happened in February. And the panel essentially gave the SKA quite a good report this time, and because the SKA has now tied down a baseline design, which they didn't do for the first concept design review. So the panel was very pleased with that. What was quite interesting is that the panel sort of applauded the team, the international team, for the approach that they take, which is a system engineering approach, which was initiated by South Africa on the Meerkat telescope. In fact, the project manager that was based in our Cape Town team was redeployed to Manchester and is now heading up that international effort for the engineering design of the SKA. And we're actually quite proud, that's one of the sort of victories for our team that nobody even talks about. So we're quite happy that the engineering practices are getting into the international project, because you can't really, sort of diffuse or sort of diverge too much from key engineering decisions once you've got a proper engineering process in place. So all of the different components of the technical work that's been going on is being evaluated now. And there's quite a difficult period coming up now, between now and probably July or so, when they actually want to pick the office or pick the country where the new central office will be located. It's first been in the Netherlands. It moved from there after open bidding process to the UK at Manchester. And there's now a call for proposal out for bidding nations to put forward proposals to host the international office for the next period. And from what I understand, that those bids have now been closed. And I think it's Germany, Italy, and the Netherlands and the UK, from what I understand, that actually submitted proposals. And that process will be concluded towards the end of April. So we'll know then where the next phase of the international project office would be.
Sorry. I didn't get that. You said the project office is supposed to be Australia and Manchester. I didn't get that.
No, there's two different things here. The one is the actual telescope and where it will be built. That's the international competition. But they also allow the participating nations. Remember, there's, I think, about 17 countries involved in the sort of key work in the consortium. And they allow those nations to host the international project director and core engineering staff and so on. They basically oversee the development of the project globally. And they are supposed to pull together all the strings of all the different nations and synthesize it into the SKA design.
And the Manchester office hosted it for, I think it's 3 years now. And before that, Astron in the Netherlands hosted it. In fact, in the previous round, we submitted the bid as well to host the international office. But they asked, and Australia did the same. But they then asked the two host bidding nations to actually withdraw from the process. So we can't participate in that. Italy is very enthusiastic at this point, and I visited them in November, and they certainly, I haven't seen their bid to host, but I think they're probably going to put in a strong bid, as is the UK. The British government is backing them very hard, and the Netherlands again wants to host it. So I don't know what the final submissions were, but it doesn't really affect us that much. You know, there's a lot of small things like travel arrangements become an irritation if you've got to go to Rome, but it doesn't really affect us at all. No, not at all. It's difficult to get to Rome in one night, so. The SKS pre-construction phase, there's been no debate as to what happens after 2012 when the EU-funded project called PEPSCO is running out, and most of the R&D components of the design is then being concluded. And there's a view that was also, I think, initiated by us to say that there will be at least a 2 to 3 year detailed engineering design phase that has to follow this in order for the telescope to be built from 2016 onwards. So I think they've realized that that is indeed the case, and they then, the International Office put together a pre-construction plan, which has not been released for public eyes yet, but it's currently under review. And in that plan, they propose certain ways in which the infrastructure in the selected country will be built out. Remember that the decision on the bid will then be will have been made. So from then on, it's a focus on how do you actually build this instrument in the country that you've now selected. So that has all been going on. They produced a document in December, and it's up for review. And the results of the review will be made public in the PEPSCO board meeting and the agency's support group meetings that happen in Rome in at the end of this month. That pre-construction document also talks about a legal entity that will have been established to now take ownership of the SKA, and this legal entity will be established by July 2011. So the first the funding council, as they call it, will now be selected in Rome at the agency support group meeting where key government officials are present, and that will then take forward the description of what this legal entity would look like, the contributions from the participating nations and so on. Now this is the area where I'm a little bit more comfortable because I'm an engineer. So I just want to give you a quick rundown on the actual engineering work for the Meerkat telescope and where we are. And just to recap, you know, we started at the end of 2004. In fact, in September, we came back and we said, you know, in order for us to make people believe that Africa can actually do a telescope, a high-tech experiment like that, you see, the key difference between a telescope like this and the World Cup is, you know, the Soccer World Cup or Rugby World Cup, is that the nation, whoever hosts this afterwards, need to look after this instrument for a good 30 to 50 years. And it's not like the World Cup that comes into your country for 6 weeks and disappears and, you know, what then. So the international community didn't believe that Africa can actually conceptualize and build a telescope. And they also didn't believe that Africa has the human capacity to look after it for 30 to 50 years. And we said, we'll prove you wrong. So we came back from Canada in at the end of 2004, and we said to government, we need to build something, even if it's very small, to show that we can conceptualize such an instrument and that we can build it. So they gave us a little bit of money to build. I think at the time it was 7 antennas. And the team that we have actually recruited at that time really excelled, and we delivered the XDM, what we then called the very first prototype, which was a highly innovative antenna, quite a bit ahead of schedule, and it really worked. So it's still a science instrument in our Artemis Hook now, even though we didn't intend it to be. We were then granted some extra money to build a slightly bigger telescope in the Karoo. And, you know, really, I think based on the track record that the team have built up internationally, we were then given the mandate, I think it was about 2007, to build a world-class instrument. And we spent quite a bit of time actually arguing as to what a world-class instrument would be. And I think the concept design review, which happened last year, has now tied that down. So we then went into quite a good process of understanding what the international community will do with an instrument that we thought would be world-class. And that process has now been concluded, and we're having a design freeze in July when we do the Merca design review by an international panel. So the aim is to roll out the Merca infrastructure between now and the end of 2012, and then immediately after that, the telescopes will start appearing on site. We'll probably issue the first tender, award the first contract during next year, towards the end of next year, for the antenna structure itself, and then the rest of the system will become sort of apparent on site. But between now and then, we'll start building the roads on site, the extra buildings, any facilities that we'll need, and so on, construction camps and that sort of thing. You'll see that it ties in, the actual time schedule ties in very nicely. Immediately after we know we've won the bid, the international SKA projects infrastructure needs to start rolling out here. So the idea is that this team, we can then redeploy into SKA infrastructure rollout as soon as they finish their work. And then SKA phase one rolls out immediately after that. That was one of the key drivers for the design change in the Meerkat antenna, because we tried to keep our tabs on what the antenna would look like for the international project. We're arguing very strongly for a case where we built 64 antennas that's so close to the SKA design, and it's such an expensive component of the system. The antenna itself is about 50% of the total cost of the telescope system. And we're saying that if you already got 64 of these on your site, which cost you quite a few million to build, then you know you can't really argue that you should build from scratch on another country, in another country. So that was one of the key issues behind our approach on this. Apart from that, there were some really good science reasons why we did this as well. So this will be what the antennas will look like. The little picture on your right there is basically a three-dimensional print. If you can maybe just have a look at the person standing at the bottom right-hand corner there, and you can see that it's quite a big structure. It stands about three stories high. And the key thing about this design is that you can actually use a ladder to climb up to the feed system, which is somewhere there. So you don't need a big cherry picker to get up to the top there or to sort of to the middle there. And one of the key things that we had to consider was the maintainability of this instrument if you build thousands of them. So there were lots of reasons why we picked this design, but this was one of them. As I mentioned, in December 2009, we asked the international community what they would do with an instrument that we thought would be world-class, and we gave them certain key design parameters. And we had an overwhelming response. About 300 research teams made proposals for what we call the Meerkat Large Proposals program. And we've now gone through quite a rigorous sort of selection process and picked nine big science surveys. About 70% of the telescope will be used for those big surveys. And those teams are going to be asked to, between now and 2013-2014, to work collaboratively with our engineering team to develop some of the software and the processing algorithms and so on that they will need to interpret the data from the telescope and turn it into science images and so on. Just for those who are a bit more technically minded, the current telescopes, as you we'll see them on site. I believe some of you are visiting the site at the end of the month. Looks like this. Quite big structures by themselves, but it's what they call a center-fed antenna. So the feed sits there, and if the feed is, if the antenna is actually pointing towards the horizon, you still need a cherry picker to get up there. The issue here is that when a signal hits the antenna, it can go straight to the feed, which is mounted there, or it can bounce off any one of these legs. And in the new design, it makes this particular design of antenna a little bit cheaper, but much less efficient. So in the old design that you will have read about in newspapers, we needed 80 of these antennas to be able to get the sensitivity that we needed to do certain observations. The new design antennas is much cleaner, and it looks differently. So when a signal comes in from outer space, it basically hits the dish and it bounces onto a small dish onto the receiver. And at no point can it be distracted by bouncing off a leg of a mount leg holding up the feed in place. So it's a much more efficient system. So with 64 of these antennas, we get better sensitivity than with 80 of the others. The antenna is slightly more expensive, but the maintenance issues are less. Obviously, if you only got 64 systems to maintain, you need less maintenance crews and so on. So we had to find a balance between the sort of total cost of the system over the life cycle of the cost of the system and the benefits you're going to get.
want to get full time. So it was quite a tricky sort of weighting that we had to do, but we decided to change the design accordingly. And of course, the alignment of the SK was very important as well. Just then to give you an overview of activities as we go ahead now, between now and 2016, we will continue to do work on the Cat 7 antennas. Remember, it was an engineering prototype to start off with. We now have a very long queue of scientists wanting to do science with this instrument, and we're having to find ways of getting the scientists time on the telescope, but also preparing the telescope so that it can actually be a 30-year instrument, which is something we never planned. Engineering prototypes, as many of you will know, you build the system, you do the test that you want, and then you decommission it. But the science community has told us, you know, where you're going to get decommissioned, these antennas, they're too good, so we want to use them, and we're having to find ways now to make sure that they can be used. The site bid will have been concluded by 2012, and obviously the host nation will be preparing to host the telescope then. The UN Capital Development Program will be continuing. I'll give a bit more details about that now. And we're hoping that we can get enough interest in Africa to build what we call a VLBI network, and I'll give a little bit more details on that later. The Meerkat infrastructure will have been rolled out, and we hope that from 2013 onwards, that team can be redeployed to build out the Meerkat SKA infrastructure. And then the Meerkat deployment will happen. You will start seeing the antennas physically on site. And between now and then, there's a lot of R&D work and risk reduction work going on. But the first antenna should be on site in 2013, and we're trying whatever we can to make sure that it actually happens earlier. And the deployment then happens as I got it there. Just to show that we actually have done something since we got our funding, this is just a very short list of the achievements from mostly from the engineering side of the telescope, of what we have accomplished, and I'm not going to dwell on this too much now. Just to say that we do have grid power to site now. We've got data connections to site, so we can actually start remote operations, and the Cape Town office has been kitted out completely to start remote operations. So we've still got a mixture of remote operations and engineers on site maneuvering the telescopes and so on. But the idea is eventually that operations will be run completely from Cape Town. The Human Capital Development Program, just very quickly, we now, in fact, have got 293, not 263, bursars or grant holders on the program. We now have about 10% of the total PhD count in the country funded through our program. So we're quite proud of what this program has achieved in a very short period of time. In fact, we've run out of supervisors in South Africa. And because of that, we've had a research chairs program that was approved by DST. And that's now running 5 universities, and we're hoping that that will enable us to actually appoint more or award more PhD grants than we currently have. There's quite a few universities from across Africa that's also getting involved, and we're helping them to set up physics courses in their universities, in their countries, so that they can also start building capacity. Just a long list, and I think that's in your presentation.
Sorry. Seemingly, the hard copy that we have is this page and that other page. I don't know if the presenter is slowly, so that we can know. Because, for instance, I'm still trying to page find where she is. But
honourable member, it was announced just that you came a bit late. It was announced that some of these, the presentation do not have that, so we must concentrate on that.
Okay, I've got it on a stick here. If anybody wants to download it, you're welcome to.
Okay. So let us concentrate on that one rather than this one, because it will have some things not included here.
Okay.
They did talk about that.
Oh, thank you, sir.
So it's important to be here for this time.
I don't know if this slide is actually in your pack. I've got a feeling it's not, because I added in later just in case of questions. But just a breakdown of all of the grants that we've awarded in the PhD program so far. We started off only with a PhD program, and we gradually worked our way down to an undergraduate program that was awarded for the first time last year, and internships and technician training. And as we sort of grow the program, we want to bring in even the schools level programs to start handpicking some kids, especially if we can find kids in the Northern Cape that actually will excel we would like to bring them on board, because we really do need to create role models in the communities that kids can aspire to follow. Just for those of you who are interested in this sort of thing, we've been trying very hard to try and see through our program, the HED program, that we really do the demographics right. And that to start off with, because it was a postgraduate program, we really struggled to get black, Indian, and female candidates onto the system. But we pushed extremely hard and had many sort of bridging programs and so on, and I think we're getting the demographics right now. To give you an idea, in the last award in the undergraduates, I think we awarded 17 bursars, of which one was a white female and one a black, white male. They were all from black, Indian, or colored, and quite a few women, to be honest. So just a bit of a sort of brag list, item 3 onwards. I think we're very proud of the fact that we've grown the radio astronomy community as fast as we did, and we're basically hitting a bit of a bottleneck now with, as I said, with the supervisors and so on. We do we have developed quite a strong industry capability as well, and we need to find ways, I think, to really strengthen this so that we can play a key role in the SKA, irrespective of where the bid goes to. And I think the strategy that we followed by developing key competence in some of the most expensive components of the system, and we know that certain South African companies are the only ones that can play in the game once the SKA gets deployed. I think it's a good strategy. We need to now make sure that those companies can actually compete internationally when we have to bid for the SKA. Just a little bit more on the schools program that Bill has mentioned. We really do work hard with the schools. We've employed two qualified teachers, or we helped employ them in Carnarvon, and I think that is going to start bearing fruit within the next 3 to 4 years. I think the first kids actually that took science and maths graduated from a clique at the end of last year. I'm not sure exactly what the results were. But we were trying to work with all of the schools. At the bottom of the list there, you see Lead Math and Science School. And we're trying to twin our schools in the Northern Cape with the Lead Math and Science School, and we take kids out there from the Cape to the site, and you know, we're trying to get them into teams that work collaboratively on projects and so on, just to give kids sort of more exposure. The cyber lab that Val has mentioned with the desktop cartridges, I think that's a facility that the school is extremely proud of, and in fact the math and science teachers are struggling to get enough time because all of the other subjects want to use as well with you know, e-learning programs and so on. But they really use it extensively, and the school is extremely proud of it, taking very good care of it. They use it over weekends, almost every day of the weekend, and they use it for extra classes and so on. This is just a very quick run-through. The African Array, we're really quite excited about. You know, if the partner countries can buy in and actually put some money forward to participate, the yellow dots on that Africa plan there are countries that we know, most of them are African partner countries actually in the bid, but we know that they have got satellite communication facilities that was previously used for, you know, owned by the Vodacoms and the BTs and so on, that are going to become redundant very soon now because of the undersea cables that are going in around Africa. So data will no longer be transported by these big satellite communication systems, but will be going onto the undersea cables. And we're wanting these countries to convert these instruments into radio astronomy facilities. And we visited Ghana last week. So I redeployed one of my subsystem managers as a project manager for the Africa Array. We visited Ghana last week, and they're very keen to do this. We found some case studies for them to study through, and we hope that they're going to be able to put some money forward, actually, to help with that conversion. We're in the process now of working out budgets to see how much money they will have to put on the table. And we hope that we can do that very soon so that the African partner countries can actually see some real developments. That will also, I think, give them a good reason to start university courses in astronomy and physics and math and so on, and strengthen their human capital in their own countries as well. So we've got an initiative with Mozambique as well. They're very keen to get involved, but they don't have an existing facility, so they would have to build from scratch, and we visited them as well. And in fact, their team members, they've appointed a team now, will be visiting South Africa in about a week's time for a workshop to see how we can take this further. CMAPS is quite an interesting sort of legacy experiment they want to do. We managed to buy, I think for 1 rand or 1 cent, a telescope from, it was owned by Telkom, and how did it hook and re-kit that out, retrofit that as a radio astronomy instrument. And that is going to work with a telescope in America, which is the one at the bottom left-hand side of the picture, in a place called Owens Valley, to do what they call the C-band experiment. That's an international collaboration to look back all the way to the period just after the Big Bang, to the cosmic microwave background, and get new information on that. And we do believe that this will be one of those legacy experiments that all radio astronomy experiments will have to refer back to. So this is quite an important collaboration. We did that for almost no money by getting a telescope for 1 rand and fitting it out with astronomers working in labs and sort of stealing pieces of equipment from their fellow scientists and so on. So we're quite proud of this, and they're going to start the observations later this year. So those telescopes are all being, they will basically look at the same object in the sky with the same instruments, or with these two instruments at the same time, point in time, and then put the data together and analyze it and get some new information on how the universe actually started. The paper experiment is one we're also very proud of. It's an experiment that was moved from Australia, in fact, because of the infrastructure developed on our site. And we're working very closely with them to basically study, paper stands for the Precision Array for Probing the Epoch of Reionization. And the Epoch of Reionization is basically the period about sort of, I don't know how many billion years ago, but that looks at early star formation and trying to understand how stars actually formed and why they formed and so on. So this is an experiment that we decided to invest in because it really is potentially a Nobel Prize winning science experiment. And once again, it's a big international collaboration. We're looking at ways now of, they are going to do their first observations to see whether they can identify some of the key, sort of signatures of that period that they want to find. If they do find that, they are pretty sure that this will go into what they call the ERA experiment. If you go and Google that, it's H-E-R-A. You'll get quite a bit of information. But that will be thousands of these antennas deployed basically in the Karoo. And what we are trying to do now is to see whether we can find a way to manufacture these antennas in South Africa, because at the moment they basically put them in crates and ship them to South Africa, and we put them together in South Africa, but we don't actually manufacture the whole thing. So if we can do that, that'll be quite a lot of work for quite a few people for a number of years.
Chair, before I allow my colleague Mboneni Moafe to continue on the international lobbying, you asked me a question just before, I need to trip over, in terms of which ministries were represented in the IEC. I've just got the answer back. There's DERCO. Okay. And I'll hand over to my colleague Mboneni.
Okay, I'm just going to be talking about the international lobbying strategy, and obviously the aim of us trying to up the whole issue of international lobbying is that we want to try and maximize the possibilities of us securing the bid in the face of the challenge that we
have. I'm sure it will be proper to introduce yourself formally, okay, because you've just joined us.
Okay, my name is Mboneni Moafe. Just sent through my apologies after I missed my flight from Johannesburg, and I've just arrived now. I'm coming from the International Cooperation and Resources Department in the Department of Science and Technology. Now, our target in terms of lobbying, obviously we're looking at key decision makers, and here what we are focusing on is mainly because the whole process started with an understanding that the funding model for the SKA is such that the expectations are one third of the funding will come from the European Union, the other one third from the United States of America, and then the balance from the host and other sources. Now, as a result, our lobbying has really been to focus on those particular countries, but also identifying the fact that this being a science project, you also need to have buy-in from prominent scientists in the area of astronomy. So it was therefore key for us that we identify those countries even where the area of astronomy is key, and those people whose voices in the field are actually going to be heard. And of course, there is also the role the private sector plays, mainly because a project of this magnitude presents opportunities for the private sector. And what we're looking at in our bid is that this bid is not only about South Africa, it is also about the African continent and what the African continent can offer to the world. So as a result, we felt it necessary to make sure that when you go there, you market a bid that is not only South African, but which is African, hence the need to mobilize African support. One key area, obviously, is to make sure that the public is aware, both locally and abroad, of the SKA, what it is, what it is about, and obviously the other opportunities that it presents. And we have, as a result, been increasing a lot of awareness-raising campaigns around this project. The announcement of the host nation is expected early next year, and as a result, we have increased our efforts, and we have also seen some aggressiveness also from our competitors, and we have been looking also in terms of media coverage to make sure that our bid is covered, and that it is not really as initially portrayed or as our competitors would like to believe. It is not a bid that is inferior scientifically. It is a bid that has got very strong scientific credentials. But on top of that, it provides other areas of advantage that our competitors can offer, more especially on the area of the role of science and technology for development. We have been organizing ourselves in terms of just trying to work on lobbying and looking at the gaps that we have perhaps on a monthly basis. So we need to look back at how we have performed and then also plan how best we can do it. Because at this point in time, it's not only about saying we have planned, we've finished our planning and all we're going to do is implementation. It's really about picking the gaps and plugging them as you go as well, because it's really looking at what we're doing and looking at what the competitors are doing. You might be aware also that in terms of media coverage, the SKA project is one of the lead SA campaign issues. It's on almost every day. They are information that are shared about the project, and as a result, what you want to do in a project of this magnitude is a situation where the ordinary people are with the project, they know what it is going to bring, because otherwise the area of attack in a competition like this is that sometimes people come up and raise issues that may project the bid as being one that is leaving the rest of the community behind. We've had a number of international efforts ranging from our engagement with the EU. You might be aware that about 3 years ago, our relationship with the EU was upgraded to that the status of a strategic partner. And as a result, we have been making use of the platform that we get with the EU to raise the profile of our bid. At the various levels with the scientists, and now recently we have really started increasing our presence and our effort with the United States of America. Last month there were a couple of meetings that were attended, where firstly in terms of just making sure that people are aware of the African bid, the press receptions was held with journalists, and this was done at the sidelines of the American Association of Advancement of Sciences. We also had a presentation to the Corporate Council on Africa, which represents 85% of U.S. private sector in investing in Africa. And what was heartening for us was that the meeting was attended by U.S. congressmen. It was attended by a representative from National Radio Astronomy and also by a representative from National Society of Black Physicists. And this is a group, the National Society of Black Physicists is a group that is really pushing very hard for the African bid to be successful. And again, here you're trying to look at both spectrum. You're looking at the political level, you're looking at the scientific level, because the level of investment in this project is such that you cannot just drive it from just the one angle. We also had Ambassador Rasool also hosted the breakfast meeting. And here again, what we're trying to do is to bring on board the representative of the five partner countries, because again, you want them to be fully armed with all the relevant information in case questions are asked, and they know what it is that this project is going to bring to them. So that was quite an achievement for us, and the AU ambassador was also part of the meeting. And again, this is really to make sure that the project is not really looked at as one, a South African initiative which is not going to be bringing anything to the rest of the continent. We are on a whole range of other efforts, currently working with the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, mainly to make sure that some of the upcoming high-profile meetings actually also take this opportunity to raise the profile of this bid. And we are hopeful that this, in the long run, will actually yield the positive results that we're looking for. I think in terms of really some milestones, when we started off, there was a lot of muddiness around the involvement of other African countries. And as a result, even though some of them knew that they are part of the project, they didn't really have much that they could say about it. That has now been dealt with. We have secured endorsement even of African SKA statement at the AU summit in Uganda last year, and this really comes as a huge milestone. Again, because you want to show the world that Africa buys into this. Active participation by member states and sense of ownership is beginning to show. And this is really one thing where they are beginning to really want to say to the world, Africa can actually do something constructive for the world, and they want to stand up for this project to make sure that it benefits not only them, but I think the legacy that it leaves, that it's going to be good for Africa. We have recently also received the Botswana cabinet endorsement of the SKA, and this was followed by a visit to Botswana with a whole range of engagement with the Minister of Science and Technology. This Friday, our minister will be holding a breakfast for SKA partner countries ambassadors. And again, this is really to keep them informed of how things are progressing, so that where it is necessary for them to jump in when needed, then they understand what we're getting ourselves to. And our minister will also be going on a road show to all African countries, and this is going to be happening in the next few weeks. We are also, in terms of the EU, going to continue, specifically to empower even our missions abroad with information, so that one of the plans that they have, which is to host South African S&T Days abroad, that it will very much feature SKA as one of our highlights. We have also put this now on the engagements with IPSA, with BRICS, and with the African, Caribbean, and Pacific states, more especially in the area of science and technology capacity building. We have already have some sense of endorsement, because we are wanting to fight to have these huge science and technology infrastructures in developing world as well, because there are a lot of spin-offs. This is really one thing that even within the European Union, the poorer countries are beginning to say, this is the way to go in terms of making sure that science and its contribution to socio-economic upliftment can actually also be seen visible in poorer countries. So basically, that's really what we've been doing. It's not as we might have experienced as a country when we're bidding for other things like the World Cup. It's one thing that you have to stand and fight until the last day. And yes, indeed, we are hopeful that if we continue to keep our eyes open the way we are, we're going to pull this up. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mufet. Yes. So thank you very much for the enlightenment. I think it does show that work is starting to pick up now, because I can see how full it is. I've been here since 2004. I've never seen SKA as attractive as today. which means that things are changing now towards the bid, I mean the bid year. Yeah, honourable members, we've listened to our presenters. For those who probably just want to apologise, you know, if you're a chair, you have to catch up with everything so that you can direct the session correctly. So if you have missed something else, then and then you pretend that if you have understood, then you will miss to even chair the session correctly. So that's why I've had to get some confession where I didn't understand. For those members who probably thought that we are engaging, the time for engagement is now. That is when we engage with the delegation from SKA. Without wasting time, I will allow members to make their input and engage with you wherever they need some clarification and explanations. It looks like there is an interest throughout, so I will start with this row that way. Yeah, I start with you.
Thank you, Chair. I have quite a range of questions. First of all, on the redesign, thank you for clarifying that for us. We were left a bit in the dark last year when it suddenly disappeared out of the budget and without explanation, so thank you for that. What I want to know is Australia also being subject to this redesign? Is it just us? And if it is just us, and assuming that we don't win the bid, do we then sell this technology for this redesign to Australia? Who owns it? Obviously, it's going to be a great plus for us if we own it and we get the bid, then we just keep running. But I hope that, you know, if whatever happens, that that's not a wasted effort. I sort of wanted to know whether this redesign had anything to do with the fact that if we don't win the bid, that it enables us to expand, that we have a good standalone radio telescope in its own right. A concern I have is the funding, particularly from our European partners in this, because we know that the United States Decadal Survey on astronomy has not allocated any funding for SKA this decade, and I'm not sure what commitments the European Union has made. But if the United States isn't going to be putting any money into this before 2021, who's going to fund the development up until then? I was also concerned last year that the SKA had to apply to the lottery for funding. I was a bit concerned that why should we do this when we've already allocated an awful lot of money and then you put some away? Why is it necessary for a project such as this to have to go to the lottery board for money? I'd like some explanation on that. I've got a breakdown of what the expenditure was, and I think you've only taken about $5 million of it so far. But it still seems to be a bit odd that a showcase project like this should have to go to the lottery. Right, then the other main issue that comes before us is the issue of fracking, the gas exploration that's being mooted for the Karoo. From what I understand, there is some behind-the-scenes negotiations between NRF or DST and the prospecting companies themselves. I'd like some sort of explanation of what that is. And then you're talking about the finality of the site. Will any negotiations you're having with these gas exploration people impact the final selection of the sites for the SKA? And also, I believe from a correspondence I had last year with Dr. Fanaroff, that the prospecting areas cover the core of the proposed SKA Meerkat site. So this obviously is a huge impact on both SALT and SKA. And what is this impact going to have on our bid, please? Thank you.
The next one, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is on the HCD summary slide. Yeah, I don't know what is being used to recruit also disabled people to be seen as part on that slide, even if it's at a later stage. And then the other one is that how do we ensure that most of the schools in that province are being also lobbied to know about these programs of the SKA, because you can see the schools that are being indicated there are the schools that are being closer to the area of Carnarvon, if I'm not mistaken. And the other one is that the last speaker indicated that they don't want to leave communities behind. So what I want to know is the method that is being used to ensure that we cover, even if it's your rural communities also, to know about the state. Thank you.
Next.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, mine will be on the very last slide of the presentation, the first one, and proudly South African, the Northern Cape.
Can you see that slide? Because we have forgotten what it's all about. You must leave your system on, because from time to time members will refer to slides so that you can see what it's about, that slide.
The first presentation, the last slide. Proudly South Africa. There. The third bullet point from the top. Lack of suitability qualified and all those. It says that there's a need for a local training center, and they're going to talk more about this. Can you please expand on that one? And my other question is on the schools. We know that the Cyber Lab was launched in the Carnarvon High School. And but my problem that I'm currently having, maybe it's just my own imagination, is the fact that in the Northern Cape, and especially the Carnarvon area, we are speaking mainly Afrikaans. And when we are at school, the medium of teaching is Afrikaans. So how best can we benefit if we collaborate with the Department of Education to see that, especially from primary school level, that we engage in an English medium for us to benefit from this? Because we can graduate, and then we will still have this problem that we are not compatible enough to compete in this area. And the other problem that that I'm experiencing is the fact that the last presenter talked about not leaving the communities behind. And when this Cyber Lab was launched, our communities was not on board to take ownership of this lab and to encourage our kids to excel in math and science. So I think in future, when we deal with these things, let's practice what we preach. Thank you.
Next member.
Thanks, Chairperson, and let me thank the presenters for their different presentations. I think most of my questions have been asked. One is being asked by Honorable Gillian with regard to what is going to happen with these things should South Africa not win the bid. And the other ones were asked by the chairperson during the presentation. But what I'd like to request is that I believe this presentation has these presentations have to be with us even after this. Science being quite a first monster to most people, and including myself, I'm going to request that we be provided with proper documents. because right now I can't keep on referring to slides that were presented. I have to go back to the board. I can't go in here. I can't even remember which slide was it. And also request that maybe in future the slides be paginated, because it could have been easier so that I would refer to slide number 2, slide number 13, and so on. Thanks.
Next member,
yeah. Chair and honourable members and our guests, the presenters, and everyone in the room. First of all, Chair, I think I must add my voice, in fact our voice of appreciation to the presenters for this wonderful presentation. And secondly, in a sense, they feel that they understand the things that are of concern to us, namely the question of democracy, the transformation issues. I'm comfortable that they are sensitive to those issues, and I appreciate that they keep on dealing with that. As my colleague just before me spoke, some of the questions have been taken by all my colleagues. I may have a follow-up if need be, but there's one issue which I think I need to pose. Yes, it is around the question of 253 bursaries, and in view of what I've already indicated, that they are sensitive about democracy, rural communities, disadvantaged communities, as my colleagues before me spoke, can they then indicate who are the beneficiaries of this? Is it in line with those people, the haves and the have-not? Are there any equitable distribution around that issue? So that at least those schools in the disadvantaged areas and even the pupils in those disadvantaged areas, they do actually also benefit from this scheme. Thank you, Chair.
Another member will come within the lesson unless it's a follow-up question. Is it a follow-up question? If it's a new question, I'll give you another chance. Let's this round finish. We've already passed you. Otherwise, then it will confuse the respondents. I also have a few questions here. Some of them are just to emphasize what has been said by some honorable members here. You know, I've always repeated this. When they first came to present here to Parliament about the SKA, a lot was said, especially about HCD, which is Human Capital Development, giving students, especially from disadvantaged communities, a chance to learn top science. But on our disappointment, the chair of NRF came to complain to the committee of that time, not now, the former chair, the president of NRF. Came to complain that he has been given 23 names who are being sponsored under this program of HCD. And out of the 23 names, 19 of them were white students, 3 of them were from African countries, but only one single one from South Africa who was a black student. And so he said he did not find it useful to sign for that sponsorship because it was defeating what we told Parliament. And so I've always repeated that now that there are many African countries also that are looked at as candidates for the project, to widen the project as an African project. We must also be careful, therefore, that we do not say black so much when we actually are meaning not South African blacks, but meaning blacks from Africa, at the exclusion of our own black people here who are supposed to benefit. So I think, therefore, members that are keeping on posing this question, they want to be sure about what profile you have in terms of demographics, in terms of this question, because it has already reached the committee before where it was started. You see. So that's why we need to be very sure what we are talking about here. Another thing that I noted was that initially you said the slide that was talking about this profile was actually, it was not covered initially, you added it, which probably meant that someone who knows about us and what we are looking for, keep to the day, they will not want you in Parliament if you do not include this. And that's why you added it like that. I just want to check if it didn't happen like that, you see.
It certainly didn't. I was told about this meeting late last week, and I had to, you know, I had a deadline for something else. And I was waiting for the information from Kim De Boer, which is our Human Capital Development Program Manager, and I only got it actually on Monday morning.
Yeah, it's fine. I was just trying to show that I picked up that quickly, you see. What you have mentioned about the projects that, like the launch of the lab, one of the members, I've got two members here coming from the region. That's why they are very much inquisitive, because they come from there. Some of the things probably they feel that they are not what they know on the ground is happening. And one member already has said that in that carnival, there were not many of the local people that were involved in that launch, and which probably therefore goes on. According to the observations of this committee. So I'd like, can you assure us, because we invited you because we'll be taking an oversight talk, can you assure us when we go there very soon that we will find what we have talked about? Because we're going to go there and we will pass it in that lab and we'll talk to people there, how many of them were involved in the launch and so forth, how are they benefiting. Can you assure us that this is what we're going to get? The news you are giving us here is what we'll get when we go on the ground. Finally, you have said that this resembles more or less the effort that we put on the World Cup lobbying. What have you done to really, have you had some probably consultations with the World Cup team as to how to drive this, something like this? You are still there, because we only have a few months before 2012, and as far as I've understood, it's even early next year, so we are supposed to be almost at the end of the advancement of the lobby process, judging from how it was done during the World Cup. Just want to check how much you have you tried to probably even talk to our former president, Mandela, to put an input there too. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. We'll try to respond one by one to the bank of questions that we have. So we'll start off by looking at the questions around the redesign in terms of whether Australia is also subject to the redesign, and also looking at the expansion of the telescope in its own rights and in terms of the redesign. Anita, do you want to?
Yeah, I'll surely take that. The SKA, I think we must just make a distinction between the SKA project and that design and the Meerkat design. It's the Meerkat telescope that had a redesign in the antennas and a few other aspects of the system, and not the SKA. At the time that we had to take decisions, we tried to stay as close as we can to what we think the SKA design is going to be. And for the first time now, there is a baseline design on the table that's being reviewed that is very close to the SKA, to the Meerkat design. So without sort of divulging too much about our strategy, we are trying to do this specifically to get a strategic advantage over Australia. Australia is also building what they call a demonstrator telescope, but the antennas have been contracted out to China, and China is actually bringing in Chinese crews, 10 men per container, and they come in and over a period of a month they put up 36 meter antennas, and then they take their people and go off again. So there's no benefit to the local industry in that. The Australians have chosen, I think, perhaps made some strategic blunder there. They've chosen what we call focal plane array technology, which is a technology that actually detects the signal that comes in from outer space. And they've chosen a very immature and quite high-risk technology that they said they will develop to fruition in time for the SKA. We, as part of our risk-driven approach, in 2004 when we started off, said we want to look at that technology and see whether it will be feasible to build it into an instrument that will stand in the crew sun for 30 years. And within a period of 6 months or so, we said this technology is still too immature. It will never be able to be built into the first phases of SKA. And in fact, they're really facing quite a big crossroads now, because these fees are proven to be quite difficult, and they will definitely not be able to get them to the level of maturity that is needed. So in the proposed baseline SKA, those have been put on what they call an advanced instrumentation program, which is basically still a research program. So they're really facing some key issues with some of the key technology development paths that they've selected don't look like it will be deployed in phase one of SKA. So, but the SKA design overall, the international design, that has not changed. But the strategies that the two different countries have taken being quite different means that I think we are much better aligned with the SKA now. So if we really can deploy these antennas on site before SKA gets deployed, and we can basically build out from there, you know, even if we can get a few antennas in African countries that doesn't look the same as ours, but we can link them up through optical fiber networks and so on, we will have a very powerful instrument in Africa, second to none in the world, to be honest. And Meerkat by itself, if we build it out to 100 antennas, for instance, we will have the biggest in the world, and it will be the only one in the southern hemisphere. So, you know, we think that we've been reasonably clever in the way that we positioned ourselves. The key thing is now that we need to freeze our design in order to deliver in time, as we've promised. And hopefully then the SKA, we're very much hoping, without sort of playing too many open cards, but that in the end the SKA will have to say we have to build the SKA antennas exactly the same as Meerkat, because there simply is no other way that you can do this. First of all, we'll get early signs then from an SKA precursor that can be built out. Instead of waiting until 2020 before you can get SKA science, you can now get it in 2016, and that's already full, fully online. So we're thinking that we are on a pretty good pitch. The redesign does not affect the Australian bit, and we're hoping that the SKA will eventually pick our dish as the only design. I don't know if that answers the question.
The member seems very hip. I can see she's smiling, so I think you have answered it correctly. Right.
Thanks, Chair. The next question is around the funding from the US, which was not forthcoming, as indicated in the Decadal Review, because the SK wasn't prominent in the Decadal Review. So I'm going to ask Mr. Moore to answer that question.
Thanks very much. I think the reality is that if I mean, the EU on themselves cannot really foot the bill of the balance of the shortfall that will be due to the EU not being able to contribute. It doesn't really look likely at this stage that the EU will foot the rest of it. However, I think what we have tried to do in the meantime for the African bid is, because there is a lot of sensitivities around, for example, getting the EU to back any of the two on the SKA. They don't want to do that. And what we have really done with them is we have worked with them in promoting the Meerkat and making sure that the participation in the Meerkat project is actually not just about South Africa and Africa, but there's a whole lot of people involved in various facets of it. And Anita can actually maybe refer to some of the projects. The Europe, the Americans themselves also, they have expressed an interest to work on certain aspects in the meerkat. So what we're trying to do is the building of meerkat itself to make sure that it already does some visible work in the continent, which in the absence of anything else, it can really be seen as a signal of our readiness. But funding is indeed one big challenge with the Americans not really coming on board, and we just hoping that at some stage there will be something that comes through. But what we have also done with the EU is to look at the role that development funding can actually play in the building of science and technology infrastructure. Now, this is the pot of money that the Australians wouldn't qualify for. That would actually not be given unless it really is going to be doing something around development. And our sense is that the aspects of the role of a project of this magnitude in development will actually enable the building of certain capacities, specifically in the rest of the continent. There are already projects that are being done with the European Union as part of development. One project called FIST was looking at the deployment of broadband in the rest of the continent and how that can actually ensure that the rest of the continent is linked, but mainly looking at the role of that type of infrastructure in science and technology research. And in our view, having participated in that, we see it as another opportunity to ensure that the much needed infrastructure for SKA is actually built. So we really are looking from our side at various pots of funding to make sure that while the SKA itself may not be having the money, that the building towards the SKA actually begins to have the skeleton emerging with some of the flesh in it to work towards the project.
Can you also follow up on the subject?
Yeah.
This was a follow-up.
Thank you. So thank you. Do I understand from your response that there is no financial commitment from either the EU or the United States for the funding of SKA at this stage? And that the only money that's being put into it is what South Africa is putting into Meerkat and trying to get some partners from Africa and Europe to join us. Is it the state, is South Africa carrying the gap?
Mr. Chairman, if I could maybe just try to answer that. I think the Decadal Review didn't specifically name the SKA as a high priority project, but there are certain other initiatives in the Decadal Review that is very closely aligned and is definitely part of the SKA development path. The one, as I mentioned earlier, is the ERA experiment, which has been given a very high priority. And the antennas that's being used for the ERA experiment are actually, in fact, very close to the so-called sparse aperture array that the SKA will be using. So in a very direct way, they are definitely going to contribute to the SKA game, but it's not called SKA. There's certain key aspects of the computing behind the ERA experiment, and in fact the correlator that we are developing for our instrument is being prototyped on the Paper Telescope Array, which is the forerunner for the ERA array. So Paper will basically show that they can detect certain signals from outer space, and then there will be ERA 1, ERA 2, and ERA 3, which is just a rollout of more of these antennas. And the correlator that's being developed for that, we believe, will be SKA Phase 1 correlator. So they're getting indirect funding for that. There's, in addition, there is what they call the Technology Development Program, which is quite a big program in the U.S. We're trying to somehow hijack that program by saying they were focusing on developing an antenna system that could be deployed for SKA using certain technologies. And we're saying, we would like to work with you. In fact, we signed a letter of intent last year. But why don't you come and build, they only want to build one demonstrated telescope or antenna to show that this technology can work. We said, why don't you come and build it in South Africa on our site? And in that way, we can see what they want to do so that we can see whether it's real competition. So they've got quite a bit of money for that. And they're working with, I think it's mainly Canada, to make that a reality. And then there's also a very big program called Nanograph that I think is also mentioned in the Decadal Review, which deals with pulse science and the computing equipment that goes with it needs to be set up and developed, and the algorithms and so on. And we are talking with them now to bring them on board in the Meerkat Large Surveys, because we've got a PULSAR program that was approved as well, and for them to bring their equipment to South Africa and work very closely with us to develop that. So there are quite a few million dollars worth of work going on in the background, some of them very big programs that are indirectly related to the SKA. The tricky thing will be, as the SKA is now, the deployment is planned for various phases, and it's probably going to be in different frequency ranges. The US is particularly interested in certain of those frequency ranges, which will probably not be deployed in phase one. So the tricky thing will be to keep the legal entity that is going to be established now flexible enough to allow the Americans to bring their money post-2020. And that is something that the politicians will need to decide, I think.
Okay, we can continue addressing other questions. This was just a follow-up question on that.
Sure. The next question is around the application to the loss report. You indicated that the $5 million has been disbursed, but there were other amounts that was not claimed by the NRF. Now, I think this happened or preceded. Do you want to respond? Okay.
Yes, this actually happened in 2005 when we first said that we needed to build something, and we were quite prepared to take you know, money from all sources, and were in fact asked by the DST to go to the lottery board at that point, because we must remember initially this project was only about the bid, and it's only when we started understanding the key issues that will win us the bid that we started asking for more and more money. And at that time, it was felt that we should approach the lottery board in 2005, in fact, the first time we had a meeting with them. And they said that they would award money, but only if they can kick the tires and touch the instruments. So they didn't want to just award money for, you know, conferences and stuff like that. So we decided that we claimed some of the money. The first $5 million we actually claimed against the FDM, which was a real telescope that we built. And now that Cut 7 is completed, we decided that we will put in a proposal to claim the next 25. So every little bit helps as far as we're concerned.
And I think the next big question is around the shale gas initiative. And obviously from the SKA perspective, we are concerned about it. But it's not a question of DST being pitted against the Department of Energy. We have to find a middle ground in terms of how we handle this. In terms of international lobbying strategy, that's starting to creep in as well. The international partners are beginning to ask questions as to where this is going and how it will impact the SKA. I think what we're starting to do inside the DST, we've got our energy guys that's working inside the DST to look at what are the implications of this in terms of, you know, this sort of exploration. One of the key regulatory instruments we have in place is the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act, which kind of regulates the, you know, that area in terms of radio frequency interference and so on. So obviously our main task would be looking into whether there is any, in terms of exploration, any radio frequency interference with the SKA. And you know, if there is, then we will have to have that discussion in terms of the regulatory framework of the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act. We are putting a management authority in place inside the DST. In fact, we started appointing people. But essentially what the management authority will be doing is to look after the Astronomy Geographic Act and ensure that that regulation is sort of, you know, fulfilled in terms of protecting the SKA and the Meerkat and the Cut and so on. But this is an ongoing discussion between DST and Department of Energy.
Just as a follow-up on that, actually the AGA, unfortunately, I practice, so I know it very well. So it actually it gives the sole right to the Minister of Science and Technology to regulate that zone. Actually, there are three zones there. And so anything within that zone, anybody wants to operate in that zone, whether even Transnet, passing it, they can't, if it is to interfere with the signal. So he has a sole right in that sense. Yeah. So I think that's still the problem.
Sorry, just a bit about whether this final selection of your sites will be now subject to negotiations if Shell wants to go ahead with its drilling.
No, there's no way that Shell can go ahead with that. That's why I'm saying the Act does not allow it. It can't.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I can maybe just add, the big threat to us at the moment, we have registered as an interested and affected party. I'm not aware of any deal that's being struck between Dr. Fernald and anybody else. I don't think that's happening. But the key issue for us is that while the RFI measuring campaign, the radio frequency interference measuring campaign, is going on in South Africa and Australia, that there's nothing happening in the Karoo which require people to carry a cell phone, some sort of radio transmitting equipment or whatever that can actually impact on that measurement. Because, you know, although the fracking may happen quite a bit later, the immediate threat to the bid is if there are very strong radio signals in that area because of the exploration. But as the chairman pointed out, you know, the Act is there to protect us, and the minister can be quite draconian about it if she has to.
Actually, the minister has actually asked the minister, because this shell company has been saying that they are doing it in consultation with the minister. And they said no. He's going to actually release a statement because that is totally confusing the public. So the minister come out straight. It's not a negotiation. He has never even had any interaction with them, and so that is just out of question.
No, it's just in terms of your last point, the minister did release a press statement last week, I think, alluding to the fact that she did meet with the person in concern, but not to discuss this particular issue and other issues. Yeah. Then there was a question on whether we were actually corresponding with the prospecting companies. I think Anita's answered the question. We are not doing that at the moment. Around the FCD, I'm not sure if Anita has the statistics around disabled people.
Chairman, no, I unfortunately don't. I've got the full ACD report here, and I don't have any specifics around disabled people. I'm going to have to get that info and maybe forward that to you. The other issue on the schools in the province, well, if I can maybe just talk about that. I can also once again get you the details of the school visiting the telescope. We're trying to encourage all the schools in the Northern Cape, in fact, to visit the telescope. So we're definitely trying to do work beyond the borders of Williston and Carnarvon, but that's definitely where most of our effort goes in. You know, we also do have to find a balance as to how much we actually spend on those exercises and how far out we do want to reach. What I can say is that the socioeconomic impact studies that we've done twice now, the first in 2007 and then a follow-up in 2009, also look broader in the Northern Cape to Fraserburg and Beaufort West and places like that. So, you know, the stakeholder fora as well, there's quite a few of the towns that are not included in the stakeholder fora, and they don't have fora at the moment, that asked to be included, so we're trying to make it possible for them to also establish stakeholder fora, but at the moment it's Van Wexley, Williston and Carnarvon.
In terms of whether we're actually leaving some of the communities behind, I think it touches on how we're engaging rural communities specifically. I think not just for the SKA, but you know, all of the science initiatives in general, there's a definite drive towards targeting rural communities. As an example, last weekend we were in Mafeking, and this is a program that started the month before, and we've actually accessed or reached 5,000 school kids in a space of a month. And we were actually there in Mafeking, Northwest University, on a Saturday, and the kids were there up till 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. And you should have seen the expressions on the face. You know, we provided them all set of activities and so on. So, in terms of, you know, reaching rural communities, this is starting to happen, and I think the minister is pushing very hard for us to do this. Not forcing us, but, you know, this is a priority area that we're starting to focus on specifically, and the early schools feature quite prominently in that initiative.
Yeah, just another quick one regarding the focus. The one that is focusing specifically on astronomy. This is... coming out of the engagements we've had with the European Union about 2 years ago. The European Union has got a program called Universal Awareness, in short they call it UNAWE. And 2 years ago we started talking about how perhaps that can be extended to South Africa and Africa. And then there was a project that the call for proposal for which we worked on. And about 2 or 3 weeks ago, there was an announcement that an allocation of about 19 million rand has been made, not only for universe awareness in South Africa, but mainly in Africa, looking at making sure that the young generation from all sorts of backgrounds are made aware of astronomy. And they call it the universe awareness because it covers more than just radio astronomy, it includes other sorts of astronomy. And this project is going to be officially launched, I think, in the next few weeks. And hopefully we will be looking at this being one that is going to add to the ongoing efforts to raise awareness in the communities on astronomy.
The next question is around the Proudly South African initiative, and I think the question was specifically around the need for a local training centre.
Yes, that slide I just took from a previous presentation. Sorry about that, I didn't notice that Deborah's name was still in there. Deborah is one of our very senior managers. She's actually in charge of the Science and Commissioning Program, but she's very passionate about community development. In fact, she's got a view that we don't build telescopes, we build cities. Who then happen to have a telescope. And she's working with the local communities. The Carnarvon communities come forward and say, we want to try and benefit more from this telescope than any other community around. So how can you help us? So we've made a time available for free, a few days a month, that she can actually work with the communities to put the proposals together to then go and find funding so they can fund their own training center. And the idea there is basically to train plumbers, electricians, and bricklayers, and people like that who can actually eventually build houses in the community or extend the town if they needed to and so on, and not be focused on the telescope alone. We will need certain skills. We will need technicians, artisans, and so on. And those are generic skills that you just won't just need for the telescope. And they want to put this center up, and she's working very hard with them to get their proposals ready to submit to funding agencies. And to get their courses approved and to get syllabus issues sorted out and so on. And that was what Deborah was going to talk about, but she talks much more passionately about that. We can't fund that. We don't have money in our budget to refocus onto that. So it looks like there will be funding forthcoming from various funding agencies, but we're not there yet.
The next issue is around the launch of the computer lab at Carnarvon. And I think there's two issues raised. One was the fact that the community in that area is predominantly Afrikaans. And if I got your question correct, you wanted to essentially reflect on re-engaging them in the English medium. I'm not sure whether you're asking whether that's the correct way to do it or whether they should be doing that.
Could you clarify your question, please?
Thank you, Chair. Mine was, is this the correct way to go about it, or is there another way to say that maybe we must go the English route in terms of education?
I can't comment on whether the Department of Education would only teach in English, but what I can say is that the teachers that we've helped appoint certainly teach in Afrikaans. Obviously, all the e-learning courses and so on are in English, but the kids are not expected to work on their own on it. That's used on Saturdays and in extra work sessions and so on, and the teacher works in English with them through those courses. And, for preparing our children to play in the international game, they're going to have to be fluent in English. And in some cases, in fact, we prepare induction courses to get sort of bridging courses to prepare people for English. We've done that with a number of students. And we've also looked at doing that with if we start getting involved with other African countries like Mozambique, for instance, who mainly speaks in Portuguese, we're going to have to do bridging courses for them as well. So we're working with Rhodes University to see whether we can actually engineer that somehow.
Then I think the follow-up question around that launch was around whether we actually included the communities during the launch. I think during the launch, we were targeting a very specific stakeholder group, which was essentially around the schools. I do believe the Premier and the Mayor was present, but I think you're kind of asking whether anybody else other than that, the schools, and I'm not aware of anybody else being present. But I think from the DST side, we were targeting a very specific group of stakeholders around us. The next question is around, should South Africa not win the bid? What are the consequences or implications? I think Anita has answered that in passing, but maybe you want to respond to that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The benefits to the country, I think, will still be tremendous. I think until the SKA starts doing science around about 2020, this will be one of the biggest instruments in the world. In certain frequency ranges, it will be the biggest, and the only in the southern hemisphere that can actually observe in certain frequencies. So we still got some really good world-class science, if not, we really do hope that there will be Nobel Prize science from the surveys that we selected. So the benefits to the country, and especially if we get the Africa VLBI network going, is really significant. If there are some other issues which we as an engineering team have to prepare for, if we do not win the bid and the international project starts recruiting very aggressively for the pre-construction and construction phases of SKA, because of the success of our team, a lot of them might be headhunted. So we need to make sure that we can still deliver Meerkat and be resilient enough and make it attractive enough for our engineers to stay in South Africa. And that is something that we are quite concerned about. And in fact, not just if we lose a bit, but because of the success of the team that we have, we're really struggling to make it attractive enough for them to actually stay on the project. And, you know, many of the people that work on the project are not motivated by money at all. But if your kids start going to primary school and high school and so on, and you need to, you know, put them into the best universities and schools that you can as a mother or father, then you start thinking twice about whether the salary shouldn't be slightly higher. So, you know, if we don't win the bid, things like that are really big concerns for us. But whether the telescope that we're building is going to be a world-class instrument, that we've got no doubt about.
Thanks, Anita. I think we also need to look at this in terms of the broader astronomy initiative. We have the Southern African Large Telescope, which is an optical instrument. The Meerkat, which will be a radio astronomy instrument. And then we have the S, the Energy Stereoscopic System in Namibia. So if you pull all of these together, you get multi-wavelength astronomy, which puts us on the map. I think even if we do not win the bid, we still have a very significant facilities around astronomy, and it's a geographic advantage for South Africa or the African region. We also take note of the comments made around the notes, you know, having it paginated and providing it in advance. I think I did allude to one of the challenges we face in the department. In fact, we have a 5 megabyte limit in terms of the file size that can be transferred by email, so that's a huge challenge internally. But we'll try to maybe use a courier system in the future. There was a question around the 263 bursaries, and I think there was appreciation and acknowledgement around the demographics, or trying to make it more representative. The question was around who are the beneficiaries and whether there's an equitable distribution. And I think it also tied to your question as to whether, in terms of unpacking, when we say blacks, whether it's South Africans or Africans. We do recognize that this is a challenge in the South African system in terms of getting black African students to do science and engineering. We started some programs on the ground in terms of engaging students. You know, it's not our mandate as a DST to look at the school level, but we feel that we have to. If we're talking about pipeline for ACD, it starts at the schooling level, and we have to start growing our timber at that level if we want to ensure that we have the products at the end. So we've started with the NRF. We do have a schools program that's ongoing, and I think the SKA is also engaging within the school at the moment. And so hopefully in years to come, we'll see more students taking up science and engineering from that end. Anita, you want to add as well?
Yes, maybe if I can just comment on the chairman's comments about Dr. Mangalisa. I totally agree with what you say. I've never denied it. You know, the first bursaries we issued were PhDs, and we couldn't find black South African PhDs, as simple as that. But we did give him the undertaking at the time that we will do everything we can and make every effort to turn it around. And we've turned it around, I think, in 2009, in the 2008. And he can come and look at our stats now. It looks completely different.
Just also in the ACD, and there's an internal discussion in the DST which hasn't been finalized by any means. When we started looking at other initiatives, we do have the NASP program, the National Astronomy and Space Science Program in UCT, but that's more catering for the national students. But a lot of African students already participate in that. And we were looking at the AIMS project, the African Institute for Mathematical Sciences, and that's proving a huge success. And whether we should emulate in terms of that model for astronomy in general, I think there's a general approval that we should be moving in that direction for creating the necessary capacity on the African continent. The one thing that came up from the colleagues that run the AIMS is that the program is so successful that these students are actually snatched up by international institutions, not just African, and that's a huge challenge because the quality of students coming out of the AIMS program, as an example, is phenomenal. And if the same thing happens with the astronomy, at least we would have a facility, a Meerkat, where we can absorb some of the students working on projects for that as well. I think the follow-up questions around the involvement of the local communities. And then, what have we done with engagements with the World Cup team?
I think I'll have to be very careful with this one because there's an honourable member here who knows it all about certainly the comment I made on the World Cup was mainly to say that while we are in certain fronts very confident that we're garnering the support that we're getting, that we're not going to sleep on our laurels and say we've got it all. And if honourable members can recall, very recently when the announcement for who's going to host 2018 and 2022 was made, there were two countries who were going to win each, and they actually, all of them lost. They are not going to be hosting. And this is simply because they have counted the numbers of the people that are going to vote for them, and they didn't. And what I was effectively saying is that we're picking up from this kind of experiences and saying, even though we seem to be having certain eggs on our baskets, we're not going to say we've got it all, we're going to continue to work. Initially, when we started looking at international lobbying, the thought of picking up some lessons and specific individuals having been identified, so maybe we should talk to them to see what are the pitfalls that perhaps we need to watch out for. We spoke about it, and I must honestly say I don't remember us following up on that. We have now just finalized what we call people identification, those who we want to, as soon as possible, make use of as the so-called SKA ambassadors. We've identified people from academia, people from business, and otherwise, and then from sports, who we want to just, at whatever opportunity they get, to really throw in a good word about SKA. Some of them we've identified, most of them in fact is people who have got very good global standing. So I think the lessons on the World Cup, Honorable Chair, is something that I think we'll follow up here to really learn more fairly on the pitfalls that we need to avoid from now until the last day that the announcement is made.
Well, last year we've got one of the World Cup people, so we must start here promoting the comic because he represents the interests of this comic. Okay, thanks. Members, I'll allow those who wanted some second questions. I see Honorable Sheep, Honorable. Black. Honorable Muchumi is back in that fashion, in that order.
Thank you. There's just two areas now. One is
the network through Africa. That's obviously, you know, the communication network through Africa is a huge challenge. And wanting to know what commitment there is from our African partners to help fund this and to motivate with their own governments the rapid rollout of communication network to facilitate the linking of the various telescopes. Then also the other one is on the research chairs. Of the five SKA research chairs, I think there's only three that have been filled. Is this still so? Is there still two to go? What is holding up finding people for those chairs? Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, mine is just a comment. It has been responded about the community involvement and the role that they are playing, but I don't think we are more of comfortable with that. I think during the World Cup, you know, most noisemakers were those ordinary people on the ground. If you really rely on us, you'll see us coming there wearing our beautiful suits, just standing very quiet. So those people are the noisemakers. Those people can help you to sell this bird. The bird will do the little bit that we have to do, but we rely on them mostly. I can only dance when I get there, when they dance, because they understood the song and understood their songs. So please, what I mean is that you must do more in terms of selling this thing to the communities on the ground. And the presence of the mayor, the premier, the who, it's okay, they represent people, but I don't think it's enough. We should go down, come up with programs that should go down to the people and make it sellable, yeah, and simplify it for them to can understand and to carry it and run with it also. Thank you.
Oral Mushroom.
So thanks, Jefferson, once more. The target audiences, what I'd like to find out is whether the target audiences, the decision makers, science community, and the private sector, has there been any interaction with these audiences? And if yes, what is their response? And if no, when is the interaction going to start? Because time is moving. And the last one is with regard to the criteria or criterion that was used. I don't know Carnarvon High School. I haven't been to Northern Cape. But what I would like to find out is the criterion or the criteria that was or that were used to select the Carnarvon as a LEP high school.
Okay, thank you. I've got also a few follow-up questions. Well, the first one is we are hosting this year a very big, important international conference, very well related to SKA, the IAC, International Astronautical Congress, the 62nd. Now, this is a congress that we are hoping to use to mobilize even more support for SKA. What lobby have you done or prepared to make use of this very first in Africa and in South Africa, Cape Town, International Astronautical Congress? That's my first question. Secondly, this year we are hosting the COP17, the Climate Change Conference in Durban in December. Astronautical is in October. December is the COP17. Now, SKA, Astronautical Conference, COP17, they are very interrogated. what have you done to utilize these occasions to mobilize for the support of the SKA bid? That's my second question. My third question. You have said what are the economic spin-offs of the SKA in terms of beneficiation of poor communities. But you have not said what are the technical benefits of SKA when it is now launched. What are the technical benefits of it outside the spin-offs of creating jobs because of factories and other things around it? But for South Africa, you have not said what are the technical benefits. I want to hear that these are the things that we are looking into, that should we have this, these are some of the things we are looking into. I will tell you why I am saying that later. Now, the last part two, the SKA versus SALT. There is SALT is in the southern hemisphere. There is SALT in the northern hemisphere, which looks into the northern skies. Our SALT looks into the southern skies. Now, SKA, is there SKA in the northern hemisphere? And if so, what are the lessons that have been learned from the SKA? Because I think there is, so far as I've listened to the presenters in this committee. Well, one of the presenters said to us that SKA is superior than SALT, and even showed us the superiority of SKA than SALT in terms of being able to pick up things that SALT can't pick up. Now, my question is, if SKA is superior than SALT, why did you not just start with SKA? Thank you.
Thank you. Again, we'll proceed from question to question in terms of responding. The first question is around the network through Africa and the kind of commitments we have in terms of linking up the different telescopes.
There definitely is a strategy that's put on the table, and the next step for the site selection group criteria that's just come out is to have a really workable plan that would give us a data transfer network for the SKA once it's been built. So the SiteBit team is working with all the African partner countries to make feasible, to put feasible plans on the table to show that they've got their government's commitment and their government's commitment to investment to make the data transfer networks happen. What we want to try and do with the Africa network is to start off using a system that's currently being used by the international community for the international VLBI network, which for which, incidentally, we are the only telescope in the southern hemisphere that participates in that work. What happens basically is that NASA, through their international website, publishes the computing script that needs to be run for certain VLBI experiments. It's a very long baseline interferometry where they basically use telescopes from around the world to look at one specific object in the sky all at the same time, and then they take those, they record the information on hard disks, basically. NASA tells the world what they need to observe. You download it from your computer, so you need to have internet access at your observatory. And you then run the script at a particular point in time. All of the data recorded is then put on hard disks, and it gets shipped to the Netherlands, where they actually rework all this information into real science and knowledge. And they keep track of things like the movement of the continents and all sorts of interesting science is done in that interpretation. Now, we want to start off by establishing similar capacity in African countries so that we can have an African VLBI network. And, you know, once we've got those instruments set up, we can then start linking the whole African network into the international VLBI network. And We're currently looking at what science can actually be done with the information that we gather and not just do VLBI information, science. We definitely got the political buy-in from the African partners. We do have no doubt about that. And the department is working very hard to make sure that the momentum is in place to get the information, for instance, that we will need for the RFI campaign that's currently undergoing on the site characterization and so on. But we are quite serious about wanting to establish real astronomy capacity in those countries. And you start, first of all, by the university involvements, like we have done now with some of our bursars and grant holders. And then secondly, you need to start giving people something that they can play with. And it's really just sort of serendipitously that we thought about converting these big instruments that the countries currently have that's owned by industry into radio astronomy facilities, because essentially that's what we've done with Artemisuk. It was always a satellite tracking station. And when they wanted to break it down and disinvest, we said, well, keep it intact, we will convert it. So the challenge now is once we've visited Ghana now, and we are trying to put together a budget to show them what it's going to cost to do this conversion, and then what it's going to cost to operate it. The facility in all of these countries, actually, the facilities were going to go and be decommissioned, and in some cases, some of the dishes already being broken down. We want to keep the capacity that they've got, the engineers and the skills, the technicians on that side. We want to ask the governments to keep paying these people salaries. And then we want to have a training program where we can jointly develop the capacity in their countries with the people on our team that know how to do this, so they can convert that instrument themselves. And then they need to obviously vote for money in their governments to support this. Now, in the Ghana case, Vodafone is actually very interested in staying involved because they say that they can turn this into a tourist attraction. The frequencies at which you're going to work at is not such that your mobile phone signal is going to be an issue, like the frequencies that for Meerkat and the SKA certainly is. So if they can convert that, they see something in from them and they can get some money from the Ghanaian Department of Science and Technology, and we can make some of our people available to help them build their capacity, that's the way we want to go. So far we've got the commitment from government. I think when the figures come and they have to sign a check, that'll be the real test.
Thanks. And the next question was around research chairs and the fact that there were 5 research chairs awarded to the SKA and only 3 have been filled to date. The research chairs are being filled on a continuous basis. The modalities that we use for the sector-specific research is very different from the generic one, in the sense that the generic one, we just put out a call and people respond in terms of identifying experts as research chairs, and then there's a panel that goes and looks at, the merits of the people that are, have been nominated. Whereas with the, for example, with the SKA, which is very sector-specific, we award the research chair to an institution. Okay, and it's the institution's responsibility to find the expert. I think it takes a little bit longer. So up to now, 3 of those institutions have found the experts, which we have agreed to in principle. The other 2 have not yet found the right level of expertise for filling those research chairs. Hence, those 2 are not yet filled in. So in terms of approval process, the research chairs are awarded to the institutions, and they have to go and find the experts. So that's where the problem is. We take the point around the role of the local communities in the Northern Cape, and I think it resonates with what Mr. Mwafe was saying, was in terms of not leaving the communities behind. And we will certainly look internally in terms of strengthening our communities and engagement with the local communities around the SKA and buying their support into it as well. Thanks for that. The target audiences, and has there been interaction with these audiences?
With regards to that, there has been interactions. There are interactions and there will continue to be interactions. What we have done so far in terms of the scientific area, in her presentation, Anita alluded to a number of projects that have got international partners, and that has really been an outcome of the fact that the marketing of our scientific capabilities has gone on very well. People notice that we're worth working with on this kind of projects. These are the kind of projects where people don't
work with you because they simply just like you. People want to do good science, and if they work with you, it's because they notice that you can do it. So that is going on. We also are hosting the International Office of Astronomy out of those sort of engagements where we're saying to people, this is what we can offer as a country. Now, this is really in terms of dealing with scientists. In terms of dealing with the private sector, there has been a number of private sector partners in the project, and there's also a number that we've spoken to. We've had very useful engagements, for example, with Nokia Siemens Network, in terms of them identifying Africa as a continent of opportunity, comparing that with Australia, where the opportunities are much more limited. Here, it really looks like a mining field of opportunities for companies such as Nokia Siemens Network. And they have told us that they feel that there is a lot to really benefit from the African as opposed to the Australian bid. So we do have those kind of positive feedbacks from those sort of sectors. With regard to governments, we have continued. In one of the slides that I showed the engagements where there was participation by the congressmen from the U.S., but also we have also received more than one opportunity to talk about South African science and technical capability in the European Parliament, of which obviously when we went in there we were talking mainly about our prowess in astronomy, Meerkat, and hopefully building towards SKA. So we are aware that the reason why I'm saying there has been engagement is because indeed there has been, and the reason why I say we continue to engage is because we need to continue to make sure, because we cannot ever say we have exhausted all in terms of the people that we need to talk to in science and in business and in government. So we continue to do that, and we've got plans, as I've indicated in the slides, of what we want to do in the next coming weeks and months. But also I think it is worth noting that the American Association of Black Physicists, this is really a group that is just crazy about their support of the African bid, and we want to really draw from their energy to really make sure that even in terms of their other associates in the science field, that they add a few mileage into the profiling of our bid.
Thanks. And then the next question is around the criteria used to identify Carnarvon as a high school.
I'm not exactly sure whether there was a process of picking the most appropriate city or town. I think we, as a project, started off with Carnarvon as being the host almost for the project team. And as a team, we decided we wanted to start there because our office is just outside it. And then we managed to get sponsorship for the lab. They happened to have an old woodwork facility that was no longer used, so they had the building already. So I think it's just sort of once we found the sponsor and we found a building that was already available and suitable, and the fact that our team was living in Carnarvon when they were there, I don't think there was a selection process.
The next question is around the International Astronautic Congress and how we're using this in terms of profiling the SKA. I think I was just going to share with your permission, just take the opportunity just to explain, because I think the question was raised as to what role is DST playing in this event. In terms of the space sector, the DTI is responsible for space policy in terms of the Space Affairs Act. And the DST is responsible for the strategy and the implementation. So the National Space Strategy sits with the DST. And the DTI is also responsible for the industrial development of the sector. Now, the IASC was essentially showcasing our industrial potential, and that's why we said let DTI take the lead and DST would support it. Okay? That's not to say we disengage. We're actually quite firmly embedded in terms of the activities of the IASC. For example, there was a meeting yesterday in the Council, the South African Council for Space Affairs, which reflected on this. And what we said from the DST side is that we'll take ownership in terms of the Africa engagement. In fact, there's an Africa Open Day preceding the IAC, the main event. And we said we would use that as an opportunity to lobby support, further strengthen our support for the SKA on the African continent. So that's something we're driving. And there are other initiatives that DST is driving, and SANZA will be a big, major part of this initiative as well. So certainly in terms of the showcasing the SKA, we will look at exhibition space. We already started that discussion. And then we'd also look at other initiatives in terms of forming up our communications. Just as an indication, there's been, in terms of response to the ISA, there's been more than 2,000 papers submitted as abstracts to the conference. There are 70 South African papers. We haven't yet got the numbers. They're still, you know, confirming the numbers on the African continent. So it will certainly be more than 70. I believe that Nigeria has more papers than we are. We do. But certainly we're using this as an opportunity to showcase some of the initiatives we're driving, including the SKA. Then on the hosting of the COP17, we have put in place a kind of a committee inside of DST to look at how we use some of the projects that we've been supporting in showcasing them during the COP17. For example, the hydrogen fuel cells initiatives, and this is about climate change, you know, the renewable energy, the solar, the wind technologies, and so on. To be quite honest, I didn't quite link up the SKA. Maybe that's something worth thinking of internally, so we can do that with regards to the internal committee that we put in place. Then on the economic spin-offs and what are the technical benefits? Anisha?
I'm not too sure if I understand the question 100%, because obviously the technical and the technologies that we developed for the telescope, as you well know, is the potential for spin-off into other industries is really quite considerable, and at this point in time it's very difficult to say which technologies, but things like balloon with amplifiers and so on can easily find its way into the cell phone industry and the medical devices industry and so on. Some of the computing facilities also, we hope, will be directly applicable to things like the biotech sector and so on. So I'm not 100% sure exactly the distinction you make between technical spin-offs and economic spin-offs. Sorry.
I can explain this. You see, for instance, if we look at, say, satellite technology, we know immediately that if we develop satellite technology and we launch our satellites up there, one, we will find some technical spin-offs from communications. We'll find some technical spin-offs from, agriculture, from space defense or whatever. So, space defense systems and so forth. So you already know that, you see, this technology is going to lead into all these breakthroughs in technology terms. So I'm therefore saying that SKA, other than knowing the beginning of the universe, what else you think will be quickly the benefits of humanity immediately?
Yes, there definitely there's quite a lot of work actually going on in the international community to understand that. The easy parts are things like low noise amplifiers and computing chips and so on that go into everyday things that we use, you know, digital cameras and laptops and so on. The difficult part is to understand the economic spin-off from the softer things like algorithm development for data processing, new data mining techniques and things like that. And we started to work with our team in Cape Town to see what the benefits, what the spin-offs there are. Things like remote sensing and remote, aid for independent living, for instance, for old age people that can be, you can basically theoretically implement systems in homes and where older people stay to know exactly where they're moving at what point of the day. And if you don't see movement in a house, you can completely clear out a full house. If you don't see movement in a house, you know that person is either, you know, in difficulty or that something has happened there, there's reasons why they don't move. So we started to look at the potential of these technologies that are much more difficult to understand this one, also that we can see if we can optimize that. What we also want to try and do within the team now is to start looking at the potential use of the technologies that we develop in the project for other sort of big challenges in South Africa and some issues, for instance, in the space agency, some of the programs there, some of the biotech programs and so on, especially when it comes to very big computing facilities to mine information and data centers and so on, because certainly the facility that we will need is going to be bigger than any in South Africa right now. And the techniques that we are going to have to use to analyze and understand this data, to filter it, to make decisions on the fly as to whether information that comes in from the telescope is good or usable or not and so on, the algorithms that are used for that, the calibration techniques that we need to use and so on for the instrument, that's never been thought through in terms of the real economic spin-off that can be had from that, and to also see that we get the most bang for buck that we can get. You know, the easy things are the feeds and things like the antenna systems and some of the techniques that we're going to use to manufacture the dishes can be used in the automotive industry, for instance, and satellite communication industry and so on. Those are the easier ones, and we think we're starting to understand those. But there are definitely areas where we don't even contemplate, you know, just the use of the data transfer network that's going to be put in. It will be the fastest in the world by many, you know, many times faster than any other in the world. How can we use that to do local call centers, to start servicing international companies for technological problems and so on? So we don't understand those yet, and I think the international community doesn't understand this, because this project is just so much bigger than anybody's ever done. To be quite honest about it. So I'm going to have to answer that question every time I come here, and hopefully I've got a bit more information every time.
That is why, you see, if you want to go a project of this size, it's very important to start from the cost-benefit analysis, you see, because then you know that, if you can get whatever you've talked about through a simple satellite technology system, why do you go for that big thing, if at all you were going to say, if you can achieve it with salt, why do you go with SKA? It's very important in terms of our modern economy to have a correct cost-benefit analysis, simply than just going to research because of research. That's why when we're going to publish a paper, they want an upsell, so they size up if you are ready for the paper that you want to write, because then in an abstract you know exactly what you want to do, you see. So that's why I'm asking this question.
So I can maybe just comment on the SALT issue. I think it's important to note that the SALT telescope works in a different frequency than we do. And the SKA really is going to be many orders of magnitude bigger than the SALT telescope. The requirement for data processing on the SKA is bigger than any other instrument in the world at this point in time, and very much into the future. So first of all, with regards to the science, it's different science that we can do with the instruments. What's very unique for South Africa is that we can, with the SALT telescope, for instance, we can do a certain observation or look at a certain object in the sky and get certain types of information, and we can look at that same object in the sky with the Mirka telescope or SKA and with the HERS telescope and get completely different but complementary information. So we will get, and we're very unique in the world for that. If we can build the Mirka and we can use HERS to do what they call these multi-wavelength astronomy, we will definitely find things that nobody else has ever been able to find, because nobody else in the world can do multi-wavelength astronomy of the same objects in the sky. And I think that's one of the reasons why years ago the minister has very wisely decided that we've got a very unique, the geographic advantage we've got is very real. And South Africa can become a key player in mathematics, astronomy, and physics of the future if we can optimize that. And I think that's always part of the long-term strategy. So the two different, the instruments are different. SALT is much smaller by comparison to the Mirka or the SKA, but they're definitely very different science drivers.
Which is then the reason why I put the last question.
Okay, Chair, thanks. I'm just going to start off just trying to attempt to link the technical benefits with the economic benefits. There's a study done by the OECD on the knowledge economy,
and what constitutes a knowledge economy. And I think we're focusing in South African context in terms of knowledge generation, in terms of funding R&D, and then we look at knowledge exploitation in terms of taking those ideas and commercializing them into the commercial market. But one thing that's central to that is knowledge flows, in terms of how knowledge flows from the R&D to the commercial domain. And what is critical for that is the ICT backbone. And I think there is a study, and I stand to be corrected, that if you improve or increase the connectivity by 10%, you increase your GDP by 1%. So there's a direct link in terms of ICT and the economic growth. And I think what the SKA brings in terms of connecting the telescopes with this additional capacity, then if the local communities can plug in, and I think that's what Anissa was alluding to, that this is a super fast kind of internet backbone in a sense. It's kind of leapfrogging the rest of the world in a sense. So that provides a lot of opportunities as well. And there's a lot of innovation actually embedded in terms of that backbone in itself. Then I think what Anissa was saying is correct in terms of the SKA and the SOL being very different instruments. Maybe if I can put a very simplistic spin on it, the SOLT is an optical telescope. It's like taking a photograph of the night sky. And so what you get is a very static picture of what you see in the night sky. Whereas radio astronomy, the SOLT is what is called a passive sensor. It's just collecting, it's not interacting. Whereas radio astronomy is active in a sense. It's sensing active signal that's coming from the universe. And because of that, you're getting a sense of the dynamics of the universe and how it's changing. Whereas SOLT is just giving you a static picture. So as Anita is pointing out, you get different sets of information using different instruments, but they're all kind of linked together, and that's what we're alluding to in terms of multi-wavelength astronomy. I think your last question is why not just start with the SKA, and I think Anita also touched on that in terms of the size of the instruments is very different. The cost involved, it was much easier for us to start with the SOLT as opposed to the SKA. I'm not sure the total cost of the SOLT was, but I know in terms of our shielding, did you know that?
And I think it was around 20 or so million, if I recall correctly.
Well, the picture that we have been shown from SKA compared to SOLT, we as a committee, we are politicians, we are not scientists. So we have been shown the superiority of what SOLT can do against what SKA can do. Again, to us, there was a clear superiority of SKA. And then our question was, why did we not therefore simply, because we have saved a lot of millions to put them in SKA. That's why I want some technical probable explanation which links up with policy, because then we are able to understand, because they are not linked, they deal with different things, but they explain differently the static theory versus the dynamic theory of these systems. So,
thanks. I don't think it's one or the other. If you look at the National Research Development Strategy of the department, we talk about astronomy as a geographic advantage, and I think this is where the whole idea of multi-wavelength astronomy comes from. And so you need both the SOLT and the SKA.
It's fine. Honorable members, I don't know if we still have any input to make, but I think that the presenters have got to be thanked at this juncture for the work well done, and we think that when we go visit these sites now, we'll be able to be conversant with what they've told us here in terms of the physical reality that is obtaining there. So we will be in a better position, I guess, when we go there to visit Carnarvon and see those labs and see how communities are happy and, you know, everything. So I think it's quite very useful for our planned trip to visit the area. And also even to know the future of SKA, these dish deployments.
that region there where it will form the core of their deployment. It's very, very important. But I think we must also get some kind of literature covering the whole project, I mean, the whole technology of SKA. I once read something from the internet, so we depend on internet, but we think we interact if we can get something better than, yeah, than getting information from internet.
I'm sure when you get to the site, they will actually give you quite a bit of information. And Mr. Gemini, if I can just answer one question you asked about, will we actually find the happy community when we get there? I think it is municipal election this year, so I'll be very surprised if there's not somebody that's going to try to raise some eyebrows. But I think in general, we are working very closely with the community, and certainly the ANC is very regular and very active and sometimes interesting interaction with us in Carnarvon. So I hope you'll find most of the people happy.
But I've got opposition member, party members here, and they will be very unhappy then. Thank you very much. I think the message is urgent.
Good luck to them.